Yo, welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Stephen G.
Hello, how is everybody?
What's going on, man? You've been on so many times. I don't even lose track now. Wait, was this your fifth time on or something?
My billionth time on.
What's up, man? So we're at your place, you know?
Yeah, this is my location.
We recorded actually last time you were on the podcast, we recorded here. You know, when we remastered your episode.
That's right.
Episode 56, something around that.
Yeah, what episode number is this?
This will be 77?
77.
I think so, yeah.
So, what has happened between the last...
tons of things.
Like, yeah.
Here Comes Godot is online. Go to www.herecomesgodot.com. You've been reading about shamanism in show business, and
that's
I think I'm really excited for this kind of new venture. So you got this book about, you know, shamanism and show business. What does that mean?
This book by the guy named Rogan P. Taylor. It's The Death and Resurrection Show, and it says From Shaman to Superstar, and it's about how shamanism in the ancient times can be very similar to the superstars of today.
What are you talking about? Peruvian shamans? They're in the jungle. They got nothing to do with superstars like Miley Cyrus. What are you talking about?
Well, the thing is that since the beginning of time, there's always been shamans in some form or another. Healers, spiritual leaders, even in the form of religion, that are very similar to the healing properties and ritualistic behavior of today's modern pop culture stars, such as, like, Zac
Efron.
I don't know. People go to, if they feel healed around.
Right, all those screaming girls, you know, with their genies aflutter, trying to figure out, you know,
true.
What
I saw Zac Efron at I.O. once, and he walked in. He was surrounded by a lot of people. He got recognized, and he was, it was like, yeah, he's like healing these people. They were like taking pictures of him, and they were like, felt better in the moment to be in his presence.
And it's like, if you post a picture of Zac Efron on your Twitter feed, boom, you're going to get Twitter followers. You know, he's just going around baptizing people of more Twitter followers.
I'm going to say that Zac Efron is the shaman of today.
Yeah.
It's one of the many shamans.
But yeah, the shared experience, every kind of show business thing, everyone kind of like, when you talk about faith healers or stand-up comics where everyone's laughing so hard,
that's
kind
correct.
Of like, they're laughing. When you belly laugh, it's like all your problems go away in your life, you know? Ooh, is that a mystical experience, going to a comedy club and laughing really hard?
It probably is. You know, they also say that laughing and crying are almost the same thing. Mm. This is very, you can't really tell the difference.
Yeah.
So... maybe we're all crying or not. I don't know. I'm happy when I'm laughing.
I just think
for those people out there who are actually crying when they're laughing, just figure out that you're crying and not laughing. But I hate doing that. I've done that before. And
crying and not laugh.
No, just crying and laughing at the same time is the worst. It's the worst kind of laughter.
Why? That's the best. Oh, you're sad.
No.
I don't know. I think comedy is totally my religion. You know, like for sure, improv. When you're doing improv, it's like, oh, anything can happen. You know, it proves that you can, like, you know, they have that all that stuff like the power of thought, the power of suggestion. You know, oh, if I wish I was like a greedy banker on Wall Street, then I can make it happen. You know. It's like, put that vibe out there. You know, you can attract what you want. Your lifestyle comes to you.
You can be a black shaman if you want, or you can be a white shaman, or you can be an orange shaman.
But there are restrictions of that. But if you, in improv, you know, if you want to be a greedy banker in improv, boom. If you want to be a dog from space, boom. You could manifest anything immediately and get like a crowd to react to it in
the
moment.
You become a god,
you know?
In that kind of sense.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can
make
channel
anything.
And let me tell you something. Bullshitting is the art of stand-up. And that'll come in real handy in a lot of situations.
Yeah, I think stand-up is a tool in the art of bullshitting, actually. Opposite. And improv is a tool in the art of bullshitting.
Yeah.
And then, sketch comedy is a tool in the art of bullshit, and it's just all different like forms within a reaction or a thing that
happens. Yeah, and it's like you realize when you're in an office building, everyone's like in a cubicle. It kind of forces them to be antisocial. They're only
synergy.
Having like interactions socially on Facebook and stuff, and then they just drive home and listen to their own podcasts, and just they're always like in their own little world, you know. But it seems like, you know, someone who's like super charismatic in the office, who's talking, you know, they might be able to weasel their way a promotion, even though it's all based on bullshit, you know?
Bullshit.
How has improv helped you bullshit, you know?
Bullshit has helped me improv, actually.
What?
So, yeah.
You're a shaman.
I'm just good at bullshitting. No, I mean, or we're all honest or bullshitting at the same time, which is bullshit. Isn't that bullshit that I just said that? Oh my God. But he's right, but he's wrong.
What?
He's right. But I'm not.
You're living in a duality.
It just doesn't exist. This is the best.
So you're in an improv team called Incompetentations.
That's right. Me, Russ, and I. Not me, as in I. It's I, as in I Yoshihara.
Oh. And so what are you guys performing? What's going on? You guys got any shows happening? Or?
I Yoshihara and Russ Guberman and I just did a show at the IO West Loft. It was with the four men.
Did Zac Efron and his posse
Zac
show
Efron
up?
Was not there.
Was he healing people?
If he was there, he would have been healing people at our show.
Well, that's like just so it's not even Miley Cyrus, Zac Efron. Just like he's kind of off the radar a little bit. Nobody really cares about him. What does he do? I'm sorry.
He's gonna be very mad.
He's listening to this.
He's gonna listen to this. He's gonna get very mad. He's gonna hashtag this.
Hashtag furious.
We're fucked.
Underscore.
We're very sorry,
Zac
Efron. And we're sorry.
Hail me.
We want to say we're sorry, Zac Efron. This is a message to Zac Efron. We're sorry.
Someone tweet
we're
him.
Sorry for what Eric said.
Abruptly.
This, we don't. These are not the words that. Oh shit, we're fucked. Don't know your lawyers!
All your liars. Oh. So, what's going on? Are you enjoying your summer? It's a little hot out right now in Los Angeles, you know?
Oh shit, yeah, it is hot out there. It's hot.
It's
hot.
Only May, and it's not even August. Yeah. It's already fucking 104 degrees outside.
You can't fucking hang out with people until at least after the sun goes down, or else you guys will just die together. You have to be either going to the beach or something like that. You have to. I mean, that if you don't, you'll just die in your house from heat exhaustion if you just stay there all the time. So, people, get the fuck out of your seats. Stop listening to the television.
Put a nice in your crotch.
Yeah. Put a headphones in your ears. Put this on your phone. Walk outside. Have a good time, and just walk. Breathe, people. That's my message. Breathe. It's time to breathe.
Get a lot of water in. Keep hydrated. So, speaking of show business, you know, I was thinking about recently. We had Donald Sterling, you know, his trophy wife kind of recorded him making some racist rambling statements, you know, owner of the Clippers. And, you know, then she put it online. It just seems like you got to be really careful, you know, about your trophy wives, because, you know, you don't know what motivates them, you know? You don't know when they're going to just sell out something to TMZ for $500,000, you know? If you're super rich, are you going to get yourself a trophy wife and then, you know?
I mean, this is a story that's happened for ages, you know? This is it's just the story of the trophy wife.
Yeah.
We should do something about this.
Like
the trophy, write a sketch about the trophy wife.
Well, what's weird is, you know, Oprah, she has kind of a kept man in Stedman, you know what I mean?
Right.
And whoever has the money, they kind of get to make the demands in the bedroom, you know?
True.
It's like, you know, they kind of, the trophy wife and the trophy husband, they just kind of feel obligated just to be like the sex object after a while, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that is an unfortunate, like, power control thing that happens in couples. But you know what?
It's kind of hot.
It's kind of hot. It depends on who you are in the relationship and if you can understand that the relationship is the way that it is and you're cool with who you are, and then you work well with another person.
Yeah.
But then if you don't know who you are and you're just still trying to find that out, then that can be very disturbing sometimes, and it can right. a lot of shit can happen.
But you think that Oprah, like, kind of has the run of the mill sexually, like, if it's 2:30 a.m. and, you know, she wants her taint and asshole eaten out, like, you know, do you think she just wakes up Stedman really rudely, you know? That's her cat man just like, oh, you're too tired right now? You're too tired right now? Well, you know what? My fucking yacht is too tired for you to fuck around in the ocean tomorrow like you were planning. My fucking 90-room mansion is a little fucking tired right now having your fucking ass in it. Why don't you fucking put your face in my meat basket right now and let's fucking earn your fucking spot here, Stedman. You know, I just kind of think that that's kind of what's going on.
And then he's a bit, yes, ma'am, sir.
Yeah. Oh, he's like, oh, shit, all right. I fucking know my place now.
What is Stedman? Stedman's like, is what I would just think that he's really nerdy.
I think he just like always pretends to be like, oh yeah, I'm managing businesses. I'm managing it, but really he just fucking wakes up at noon in pajama pajamas. He just fucks around, eats like a, you know, 3 apples. It just takes a big shit. You know, watches cartoons until like 3.
Stedman, if you're listening, we're really sorry.
He's got to sleep in, because if Oprah wakes him up at 3:30 in the morning, you know, she's going to work all day. So, you know, he's got to...
Oprah, you're probably listening, but you can handle it. So it's cool.
But does that inspire you? Do you just want to open the savings account and, you know, just buy like a teenager when you're like 80? Is that the plan?
An emotional savings account.
Ah.
Where a lot of love goes out to a very special person out there. She knows who she is.
That's the way so that all your bitches think it's them.
I love you.
Hey, keeps it open. gets that. So what's going on? You know, you're always, can we talk about this? You're always talking to ladies online. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Can we broach these subjects?
We can.
You know, I always see you kind of like FaceTiming with very beautiful ladies. You know what I mean?
You know, it's just for fun. Like if I happen to be there on a whim, right. You know, because when you go to different countries, then you gotta be... You change as a person because it's a completely new environment, and you have to right. change into what the customs are. And yeah. then sometimes you have to fucking whip your dick out and fuck yeah. some bitches.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the customers, if you're in, you know, China or the Philippines and you're an yeah. American, it's yeah. like customary for the American to like wipe his dick around on things. Like, they'll be like, oh, please, you're American, you're American. Have my daughters. You know, it's just kind of that they expect it. We've had so much imperialism that they're just kind of used to it now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that I was in that situation.
Yeah.
Where I was actually trying to sell myself to Philippine men. Yeah. And,
how's yeah, that racket going? Work out.
Huh?
How's that racket going?
They don't really want anything to do with me.
Yeah,
I don't think where Philippine men are into me.
Where were you trying to meet these guys?
Huh?
In the Philippines, or
no? I'm just trying to meet. If there are any Philippine men out there, just let me know.
That's all Steven. Of them. Hmm? That's all of them.
Hmm? Yeah. So like all Philippine men, but not Filipinos.
That's a different thing.
No. A Philippine.
You got the e-cig. Are you paying attention to the rules of the e-cigarette? Like, now sometimes you can't... Can you still smoke them inside?
You can smoke them inside right now.
Right, but if you're at a restaurant, Are they still doing that?
No, you can't do it at
Riverfront. Okay, but there was those Wild West days when they first came out, where everyone was like just huffing them in, you know, public places before the rules.
You know what? Me personally, I don't give a fuck. But I think it should be up to the establishment, and some establishment should be able to say that their place can have the smoke happen in it.
Yeah.
Like my place, I established this place like that.
And it's like, if everyone's smoking them, then what the fuck is the thing of secondhand smoke if everyone has one? You know, so the law's coming out and says, you can't have these things? Well, if everyone already has them, they can't agree that we're going to smoke them here? It just seems like a
You know, just smoke them outside if you got them.
I remember I was working with somebody for a little bit, and they just had one around their neck constantly, like a necklace. And they would, like, huff it, like, every, like, fourth breath was their was a nicotine blast.
It is actually quite addicting.
Do you think that they're more addicting than cigarettes, or do you get just, like, cleaner nicotine blast to your system?
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't know the science on that? I went to Germany, you know, when I was a kid. That was pretty cool. When I was 16, I was an exchange student. And I remember one time I got really drunk. You know, there's a famous story in my household that one of my great-great-great-grandfathers, German man, was working in a coal mine one time, you know, and in Pennsylvania. And he was working the coal mine, and then he would just get fucked up drunk every single night. And one night, he's very cold, you know, and he got fucked up drunk, and he goes home, and he made it all the way home, who knows how, you know. And then, but he couldn't get the key in the thing. And he actually died on his stoop, drunk, frozen, because he couldn't quite get the key in, because he was too drunk. And I had a very similar experience in Germany, you know, because the drinking age was 16. All of a sudden, I could just walk in a pub and start drinking, you know, and that fucking blew my mind at 16, you know. So then they wouldn't even card. So I remember I, like, had this big fucking map, and they gave me a bicycle to ride. So I was like, I would, like, fucking get to ride the bike down, stop at an intersection, be like, okay, I'm at the corner of, like, Adolf Way and Fußstrasse. Okay, and then I fucking, like, go to the next intersection. Okay, where am I? I'm at the corner of Fußstrasse and Maiden, you know. But it just took me forever to get home. Finally, I got home, and I couldn't fucking get the key in the thing.
Oh, no.
I couldn't get the key for, like, 20 minutes. I was just... It wouldn't work. It wouldn't go. And then I actually had to ring the doorbell in the fucking
host. Oh, you have roommates.
No, like, it was, like, a host family. Like, the kid came over to my place in Jersey, and I went over to Germany, you know, and I stayed with the host family you know. So then the host mom came down, and she was so fucking pissed, because it was, like,
yeah, you weren't supposed
2
to
in the morning, and I was, like, drinking, you know. Yeah, so you've been noodling a little bit. You're playing some guitar recently, keeping your brain sharp, you know. That's, you think, right. It's activating different parts of your brain?
That, absolutely. Like, it's totally opened up my whole range of, like, music.
Yeah?
Yeah, and, like, scope and just everything that I listen to, and I can hear it and feel it at the same time, and, like, moving through different senses. And
whoa.
Yeah.
You're like a shaman performer, I guess.
Maybe. I had a dream one time where I was playing the best song in the world.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How did that go? Not right now.
Huh? No, I don't know. I don't know. I can tell you it was awesome, and it's gonna happen.
And ladies were just blasting their shirts off and throwing their panties on the stage.
Of course they would.
Yeah. Hey, and by the way, Stephen G loves you. We put that out there, so just so you know. Just want to tell the audience out there. No matter how hard things get, Stephen G loves you. You know? So you can fucking cash that at a bank. Fucking get a cash a fucking cashier's check off that shit. Go get them fucking MoneyGram. Then they'll be like, what's this redeemable for? And then you say, a little love from Stephen G. And they'll be like, we take that here. You want that into euros or pesos? How do you want it?
How do you want it?
You just want cold, hard cash. That's what I'm saying, because Stedman doesn't make any. He's gotta give out a lot of love for all the luxury he lives in a day.
That's true.
Do you want to sing a little song about Stedman?
Stedman? You want to sing a song about Stedman?
Yeah. In the hills of Connecticut, you'll find a mansion deep in the woods, secluded from prying eyes, full of luxurious goods. There's a man child sleeping in till noon. He's got a silver spoon lodged up his ass. His name is Stedman. He buys caviar with his cock, and he lives in luxury, giving out only his man meat.
Oh, Stedman, oh, Stedman, you're a little bitch. Oh, Stedman, oh, Stedman, that's how you're so rich. Oh, Stedman, Stedman, at least you know your niche. Oh, Stedman, oh, Stedman.
So, where's your fucking Maserati? Probably you don't got one. Probably you ain't eating the right buns. I'm eating Oprah's buns. I'm eating her asshole out. I'm Stedman. And that's how I pay for my shit, motherfucker. Motherfucker. Stedman. Stedman. Stedman, you're gonna eat my box. You're gonna eat my taint. It's 2 a.m. Don't say you ain't, Stedman.
You're gonna earn your breakfast. Your dick is too small. Give me the fist. You eat this box right. Mama give you cash if you play nice. You can come up for air 20 minutes after I come twice. Stedman, I ain't gonna marry that fool. The only ring he should have is my asshole. Beat up my clitoris, I can't feel nothing down there. Here comes the chorus, I got a lot of pubic and ass hair. Oh yeah. Okay. Earn your fucking keep now. Oh shit. I don't know if I'm gonna come or shit. I'm gonna ride the fish now. Oh shit. Get a lock on ya. Don't look my box in the eyes.
So, Stephen, last time you were on the podcast, we were talking a little poker. Right. You know, you're a poker aficionado. You're telling me you've been to Vegas a couple times. You've been twice, right?
I've been twice. That makes me a poker aficionado.
Look at you. No, but, you know, you're good at poker and stuff. You play Vegas.
I like playing
you
poker.
Love
I like the
gambling.
Game. I played it there twice. I did okay. I'm probably up from Vegas. That's nice. Because Vegas is nice because you get to play against a bunch of tourists.
Yeah.
Instead, because everybody's there from wherever. And Vegas is quite a great spot for that. And because you're playing with a lot of people from wherever, you can expect similar mistakes to be made. And you can definitely tell people vastly differently because they are all... I mean, if you look at the different types of people, they're a lot. I would say they're about 16. About 16 different types of people that you could play against.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go through every single one with you.
Because it would be a little...
It would take a long time.
Well, and also it would be probably racially insensitive.
Yeah, exactly.
But you try and profile people to kind of know if they're going to be tight within a certain area.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
When they're going to put their money, when they're going to be bluffing, you know. A lot of racial profiling goes into that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, like a race, gender, creed. Like, I first ask them, like, what religion they are. Then I got to figure out, political affiliation.
Right.
Also,
how are you going to look at a Queen Seven, you know?
Exactly. How does a Republican look at Queen Seven versus a Democrat?
Right. When they're thinking, am all these scallywags who are on the fucking dole's going to, why should I pay for poor people? You know, that goes through their mind when.
Yes, those people will look at Queen Seven and be like, I'll fucking play Queen Seven, doesn't matter.
Right. I drive a big truck. Don't get a lot of miles per gallon.
No, those people who drive big trucks are very tight. I've seen big biker dudes with like tight tattoos on that are just like, they have the tiniest little, they're like pocket aces or nothing.
Right.
And then they lose the pocket aces and they're like, oh shit. God damn it. Rage. I'll see y'all later. God damn it.
I got some illegitimate twins to impregnate.
All right, well,
that's a rule.
I'm gonna go sell a Harley. You know? Yeah. I got about 7 of them.
Yeah,
but he just loves doing whatever else he does and does a good living doing whatever.
Yeah,
and you know those guys.
What
are
do
awesome.
Biker guys do for a living when they're not on their bikes? Is it all
bike? It's all bike related. It's gotta be because they do what they love.
Yeah,
they also are gangs,
tattoo people. They're probably.
Do you have any tattoos, Eric?
I don't have any tattoos.
I don't also.
But,
I dated someone with tattoos.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it hot?
Yeah.
The thing about tattoos is, like, I can never just make up my mind about something. And to think that if I think something's cool on Thursday, am I really going to think that's cool 45 years from then on a Tuesday?
That's
you know,
true.
Like, that's my problem.
You know, maybe when you were old, you just go back and you're like, one time she had a dime on her, like, her. Yeah, she was just, it was a butterfly. And
I saw this weird thing people are doing. They're getting, like, very high-tech 3D tattoos. And I saw one lady had a tattoo where it looked like, you know, there was some monster crawling out of her rib cage. And the way they kind of did it with, like, all these, like, 3D shading things, it looks very realistic, you know? It's fucking creepy.
Wow.
Yeah, they can, like, computer graphic it and, like, put, like, stencil it on or something. I don't know how they do it.
Oh, my goodness.
But I bet all that shading, there was, like, this giant black area. I bet all that shading is brutal, you know? That's the hard part. I might get a tattoo. The only, if I, like, was jailed or like on a native plant, like a native reservation for like 5 years, and then someone would like chisel it onto me with like a pointed feather, then I would get it if it meant something. But just like to be like, I want a flexin' barracuda, you know? It's like, ugh, I don't know if I could ever. I don't know, man.
Yeah, ex-girlfriends with tattoos usually end up
dead or in jail.
Yeah. Actually, the tattoo girlfriend I had, actually.
Yeah?
Did have a DUI.
Yeah?
And
it's a bad time in your life.
I mean, it was after we had broken up, and it's been many, many, many years.
Yeah.
And she's been quite an influence in my life since I was 19. I haven't seen her since I was 19. That's, like, one person I would, like, run into and just be like, get the fuck away from me. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, everybody's having fun.
Yeah, like, alright, no, I'm not gonna be here right now.
Yeah. We were talking earlier, you were about your book of shamanism, and you were saying something interesting about how the shaman has to go through a very traumatic event in their life. They have to overcome, they have to almost die. You were saying your teacher, Miles Struth, was hit by a car. At a young age, right? And then
I think actually when he was older.
And then it made him dedicate his life to improv even more. Sam Kinison famously was a mild-mannered little boy. He was a comic in the 80s. And he was hit by a car, and it kind of transformed him. It changed his personality. Maybe it rattled his brain, and he got more aggressive. And he got more, it kind of shook the crazy into him.
Maybe he saw something on the other side that made him want to scream.
World hunger? Stop sending them food. Don't send these people another bite, folks. You want to send them something? You want to help? Send them U-Hauls. Send them U-Hauls, some luggage, and send them a guy out there that goes, hey, you know, we've been driving out here every day with your food for like the last, 30, 40 years. And we were driving out here a day across the desert, and it occurred to us there wouldn't be world hunger if you people would live where the food is! This is sand. Yeah. It's sand. You know it's going to be 100 years from now, huh? It's going to be sand! You live in a fucking desert! Get your kids, get your shit, we'll make one trip! We'll take you to where the food is!
When he was concussed, he saw a very troubled, very angsty angel who whispered a lot of secrets into his coma brain. You don't know what people see when they have a near-death experience or when they visit the other side. You know, sometimes when you visit the other side, you might just be laid up in a wheelchair and have a lot of time to regret, have a lot of time to reflect. Sometimes you visit the other side. Sometimes you see it blinding light. Sometimes a wizard whispers to you a new destiny, a new fate to pursue, a new journey to go on. And you take that knowledge from the spirit world, and you put it deep in your soul, and you light it with a fire to guide you the rest of the way. A shaman taking spirit knowledge. Sometimes that spirit knowledge teaches you that you're gonna be the best kept man. You're gonna live in the best mansions. You're gonna marry the richest, fattest lady you can. And you're gonna suck those big, black, milky teats who've been on network television for 20 years. And you're gonna climb the top of that woman. You're gonna climb the top of that mountain. And you're gonna live the rest of your life in bunny slippers. Waking up at 4, 5 p.m. Fucking around on a yacht. Playing in an indoor private tennis court. You ain't gonna be paying for shit. Cause the fire burns deep inside you. A will to please a massive woman with a lot of sexual needs, a lot of creepy desires. Illegal in many states, but she's got money, oh, and she's got a ton of it.
Oh, Steadman, oh, Steadman, you're a little bitch. Oh, Steadman.
Not a lot of people know this, but Steadman, he was in a terrible car accident when he was a boy. He visited the spirit world, and this mission came from above, and he's been burning bright with that light. He's been munching on Oprah's asshole for the last 20 years. Sucking on that sweet Oprah asshole, sucking on those big teeth, and getting paid and paid and paid. But oh, his soul took a beating, because she likes to be on top too, and that really wears at his back. He's displaced his discs, but he's got a mission to sling us some dicks, and that's what he's gonna do.
Oh, Steadman, oh, Steadman. Oh, Steadman, oh, Steadman, that's how you're so rich.
A
was like, how long can Eric go? I don't know. I was just like, I was just gonna see how long I'm going. I'm gonna like stop when he stops. He's not gonna stop.
he just kept playing, so I just kept.
The boy had toes like a turd.
Lick a turd, lick a turd, lick a turd, lick a turd, lick a turd.
Little boy, he was drawn to the swamp. He put his toad fingers in. And he sat on his rump and he cried to God, why am my pop just chewed? What did I do? And then the frogman spoke. He said, I'm your father. I infect with your human bomb. I am your child founder. That's why you have human clones. I am your soul father. Look at my face. You don't have my ugly mug. You aren't a total disgrace. I am your child father. I've just done your mom's eggs. Toads make love in different ways. I carried you on my back in a ever-expanding sack, and then I put you back in your human body. I am your toad father!
Huh? What's going in and out of your inbox and your email? You know, when you get one of those electronic messages and it's kind of pops up and populates in your inboxes.
A lot of it is advertisements.
For dick pills?
Dick pills?
What else? Nigerian princess?
I'm a Pizza Hut lover. I like those deals.
Are you a membership? Or do you just get coupons?
That. I get coupons.
What? Or you just showed up on your iPhone. Boom. Swiping in. Exactly. Swiping out.
Digital.
I really got... The first time I saw someone who showed up to an airport who didn't print out their ticket, and they were just like swiping on an iPhone. I have a ticket, ma'am. I have a ticket. Just pushing it in the lady's face. I have a ticket, ma'am. This is my Expedia account. See? Why don't you go to somewhere and print out a fucking boarding pass, you fucking cocksucker? But apparently, now you can scan the iPhone. You just bring up the barcode.
That's much more secure.
Yeah. What do you think? That is.
I think that's great. I think more planes should allow people to have just their phones on them instead of having to print out paper.
Do you think eventually your money, you'll just swipe your phone and then all your money will be in there, and then they'll get rid of that, and then it'll be a retina implant and all your money will just be blinked, and then after that you just hologram over to like spend Christmas with the folks for like an hour and then be like, see ya, and then disappear?
It's called Google Glass.
You think that's all coming?
It's called Google Glass.
I can't wait for the robot wars. Now, the Terminator said that was going to happen in 1997, that there was going to be robots. But now we started on drone technology.
We have drone technology.
And I imagine that in the future, there'll be wars that will be played out between all robots, you know? If two countries have a load of army of robots, they'll just be like, let's let these things fight and see what happens, you know?
I would love to see robots fight, and I would bet money on robots to fight.
That would be a great league. Seems like a very expensive sport league, though. Yeah, they do, but it seems like it's not quite mainstream yet. What's it called?
I was in one of those competitions. I was in a first robotics team growing up.
Yeah?
Growing up, yeah.
Like a BattleBots type of thing?
Almost. We had, like, goals, and you had to build a robot that could grab onto something and, like, pull like, a big octagonal goal and put like shoot balls, and I had to work on the operating system, so I had to build pretty much the joystick for the whole thing.
Oh, cool.
Pretty cool.
So you were a computer whiz. You were kind of
I was a fucking middle school kid.
What was the technology of your robot like? How would it fight? What was its main move?
It like grabbed shit, and then it was really strong. We just built it really strong, and then we made it so that it could throw balls into the goals so that the goals would be worth more points.
Oh, so they weren't fighting. It was like a sports robot.
Yeah, we gathered balls and tried to and like had this flywheel on it.
Right.
And then it would shoot the ball into like a goal post that would have two PVC pipes in it.
Yeah.
With and then there's like a middle center PVC pipe that had like a reflector strip on it that you could shine like a maybe like a laser onto and triangulate the distance and then like figure right. out how fast the rotor should go on the
So it wasn't a it was like the 3-point competition where it was one robot at a time.
It was two robots at a time, and we had to help each other and defeat the other two. But mainly, we just had really good funding because we had a technology school that was specifically, and we have like NC State helping us, and like UNC, Duke, Chapel, like they're all there, and like Bosch Steel and IBM is there, and like all these like big companies that, you know, have whatever they mine resources or.
Yeah, well, they're trying to get young kids in on the drone warfare game, and it starts out cute, you know. It starts out.
I know some people who play that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't tell you who they are.
What? Who fly drones or who build them?
I build them.
Yeah. That's a weird job.
It's sort of like. It's like a skill set versus a job. Drugs.
Drugs?
Drugs.
Yeah, Ify Nwadaway was on the podcast last week. He was saying he did mushrooms for the first time. He said he did Molly for the first time. Those are the two things I've done. I'm a big mushroom fan. I'm a fan of mushrooms.
I like mushrooms. I
think you should go and see the spirit world one time.
We have to go on a camping trip for mushrooms.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
We're gonna go on a mushroom trip, y'all.
Yo. Have you done mushrooms before? You ever seen crazy things?
I did them twice.
Yeah?
They're awesome.
Yeah.
I saw Mandelbrot fractals one time in the sequoias, just looking at giant trees.
Yeah.
Then the other time, it was at a friend's backyard, and we were outside, and he has a really nice backyard with, like, orange trees and hammock set up, and like,
yeah,
we just stared at flowers for like 3 hours, and then I got stuck in the bathroom. We took a walk around. A lot of stuff happened. I laughed a lot.
You got stuck in the bathroom because you couldn't remember how to open a door.
I just got. It was called the Red Room. It wasn't the bathroom. I was like, I'm in the Red Room, you guys, and like in that moment, like my perspective on whole life had changed. You know. As far as what this room was meant for. And I was like, this is a nice room to be in, to check out, because it's red right now. And, like, I haven't been in a red room in a long time, and this is a new room.
Yeah.
And, like, it should be checked out, and, like, someone should think about it. But I was there for, like, 30 minutes. And people were like, hey, Steve, where's Steve go?
Yeah.
You okay in there, buddy? You okay? And they're checking up on me, because they're also on shrooms.
I'm in the red room.
And exactly.
Red room. Does anyone even appreciate it in here? Have you fucking spent any time in the goddamn red room? Have you got to know it? Do you, like, feel its vibe at all?
Steven? Steven? You alright, buddy?
The red room.
You okay?
The red room? What color
the
is...
The what?
What color is you are you in?
Hey, check out these flowers.
Whoa. Yeah, I think it kind of, like, it gives you a window into, like, seeing everything like a baby again. It's like, you're so used to just, like, income tax. Oh, this is really important to, like, fill up. I gotta do this. And it's like, no. Just look at the world once again from the eyes of a baby and have, like, a new novelty for it, like, a new appreciation for it, you know what I mean? Just instead, I think we take everything for granted, you know? We take everything so seriously, and I think if more people did mushrooms, they wouldn't want to, like, they would use their robot skill set for maybe something more constructive.
But if those people did mushrooms, they would never get their robots made.
They would make
I think the people who don't use mushrooms should continue not using mushrooms, and they exist for a reason, and I'm cool with them being...
You don't think that they should be force-fed them?
If they've caused too much damage? You know what? After taking mushrooms and just, like, there's a reason, and, like, it's going to happen. There's not, like, and if it wants to end, it's going to end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, it's going to be the new thing that's going to happen. We got to make the change that we want to see within ourselves. And then maybe we can even talk about changing something else.
So you're saying that you're... Get your own shit figured out.
That's for me, at least.
Yeah.
I can't even take care of a plant, man.
Where's your plant?
I don't have one.
Yeah? Because they always die on you?
Yeah.
The water... That's a hassle.
Plants die. It sucks.
Well, also, it's
but
a fucking...
plants should fucking live forever.
They should live forever. Has anyone been in the red room? It's got flowers.
I know.
They're beautiful. Oh. No, but it's a desert here, man. You can't feel bad. It's dry.
Yeah.
Everyone's got shitty lawns. You know, because they're supposed to have just some fucking cactus that gets
water. I
have
to water just give it water here. Every day, but I can't. I just can't do it. I have to do something different every day.
And that's why I don't have a kid,
here,
you know?
There, you're there, you're there. I'm there. I'm not here.
I don't have a reservation. I didn't book online. But good golly, Miss Vanessa, you are looking fine. Listen, I want a table by the window. I want to watch the ocean go by. And I want to bring my bimbo.
I'm a bullshit artist.
Yeah, bullshit, people.
I'm a bullshit artist.
Humana, humana, hey.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
One day I heard you make a lot of money. If you're a surgeon and you can cut up the right honey. Plastic surgery was the game I got into. I didn't want to do the schooling. I wanted to bullshit my way through. So I started shopping. I started making these big melons. I started shopping, doing illegal plastic surgery. Now I'm a felon. Started shopping when I didn't have a license. I worked the anesthesia too. I chopped up so many people. Well, actually, it was only two. They gave me 50 grand up front. And I said, ooh, you're looking fine. After I give you some big old boobs, I'm going to take you out for some whining and dining.
I'm a bullshit artist.
I bullshit people.
I'm a bullshit artist.
Humana, humana, hey.
But don't talking about. I'm a bullshit artist. Listen to me, wait for no reason. I don't know why I'm singing. I'm a bullshit artist.
Yeah, I can appraise that art.
I'm a bullshit artist.
Yeah, bullshit people.
I'm a bullshit artist.
Humana, humana, hey.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Went down to the Apple store. I had a bunch of business cards. I hustled. I said, hey, I charter a boat. Yo, you wanna come on my boat? You wanna bitch a good catfish on your Instagram? You gotta tweet all the fish you fucking catch in the bay? You better do it with me. I got the poles, I know the way. You gotta fish in a certain way. You gotta have an experienced captain. You gotta know where to go to get those fish on the big fucking nets or some shit. Hey, how about you come with me, boy? Hey, you look like you're in social media. What's up over here? Hey, good looking.
I'm a bullshit artist.
Well, we had some good fun with the new king lost at sea. Hey, look, we could sign off now. Hey, go to erichollerbach.com, go to herecomesgodot.com, click through the Amazon link at the Podbean, Highway Diary, RSS feed, buy some shit on the Amazon, it bounces a little shit back to the Highway Diary podcast. You know,
This is a passion project, so Amazon's getting most of the money. They're the ancient alien overlord. They're getting paid. I want to get a fraction. I got a little action off that. Stevie G.
Yes, sir.
People should check out your improv show called Incompetent Asians.
If I could shamelessly plug a few people.
Please.
Yeah, absolutely. At the Improv Space on Thursday nights at 10:30 p.m. there's Discount Minotaur, and the kind people over there, like Adam Macy and Samir and Daryl Lee. Do you remember Daryl Lee?
Yeah, yeah, Monkey
Brother? He's a good guy. Introduced me to like the Wednesday night jams there, where I started playing with Drift Compatible with Russ Guberman, which is like a two-man group. We show up and like act like those two. Like we're getting into one of those robots, giant robots, and before we do an improv set, we ask for a suggestion as is robots. And, yeah, it's funny. Or as if we're in the robots and neurally compacted together, because that's the idea, is that only two people can operate the machinery.
Like a two-man RoboCop.
Exactly, yeah. So it's the two-man thing there. And then Miles Stroth has got his Wednesday night shows. I haven't been in a while, but because of anyone to this jam thing. But he's a good guy. You want to talk about him?
Or... Yeah, he was your improv coach for a while, right?
Yeah, he was on the team English Chicken Moose for a while, and yeah, he's doing like a Wednesday night show and like a Tuesday night show and like a Thursday night show. Over at the Complex, so you should check that out. It's probably all nights of the week. Check him out at milestroth.com.
And he had a really long run at the UCB Theater,
yeah,
where he won, 35 cage matches in a row.
It was more than that. I don't know. It was quite a few. And they did excellent. They're touring around with, I believe, Drew Carey. And opening for him for a lot of his stand-ups. And, yeah, he's great guy. Great guy. Can't say good enough things about him.
Cool. Awesome.
Let's see. One more thing. Danger Room on Friday nights, if you want to check out a really fun show. Jonathan Sacramone and the people over at Harvey Rocket Ship. The group was called Harvey Rocket Ship. And Jonathan Sacramone, who also used to be on English Speaking Moose, is running that show at 8 o'clock, I believe. It starts at on Cassio Street, 8801 Cassio. So just check that out.
You're just plugging other people's shows.
I'm plugging other people's shows because other people are cool. And,
hey.
Why not?
Hey, Stephen G's your best friend.
I am. Why not?
I also posted a show in the Ice House. I'll be there in July.
That's right.
Check that shit out.
Yeah, everybody. Check out Eric Hollerbach. He's a funny guy. He's, oh my God.
Filthy stand-up.
Fucking filthy. Disgusting. But it's hilarious and wholesome in the end because he loves you too.
And you learned about your toad dad today.
Yeah. And Stedman and... How much he's a bitch.
Stephen G loves you. That's another episode of Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guest, Stephen G.